Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 5th of March. Tuition prices are soaring. The price of higher education has increased by 250% in the past three decades when you account for inflation. And most students understandably have to borrow money to pay for school. 7 out of 10 graduating college seniors were leaving school with student loans which average $28,400. And according to a new study from the University of South Carolina, there can be some ill effects. Increased stress levels or feelings of depleted health can surface from accumulating student loan debt. But interestingly, another part of the study shows that students from poorer backgrounds with higher cumulative levels of student loan debt perform better when it came to mental health. We'll find out why that is the case and take on the whole issue of student debt. The first hour of our program today, we'll have two guests with us during the course of this hour. Dr. Katrina Walsman is a assistant professor in the Department of Health Promotion, Education, and Behavior at the University of South Carolina. Professor Walsman's research focuses on the effect of early life experiences on health over the course of life, and also the influence of environmental contexts like residential segregation and neighborhood characteristics on population health. Later in the hour, we'll be speaking with Professor Sandy Baum, who has written and spoken extensively on issues relating to college access, college pricing, student aid policy, student debt, affordability, and other aspects of higher education finance. I got a very interesting piece of information, which many of you, I'm sure, would be interested in, that looks at all of Wisconsin's public four-year institutions and the amount of debt that students faced in the year 2013. And it looks like, you know, some of the schools are a little bit above average, but it's about the average, $28,000, $29,000. We're interested in hearing from you as well. We've done these programs before, and it's always amazing to hear the amount of debt that students have and how you're coping with it, how it may have changed your life choices. And would you say that it has had an effect on your mental health? Do you feel more stress because you've got this accumulating student loan debt? To reach our conversation, our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Professor Katrina Walsman, thank you very much for being with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Kathleen, for inviting me to be on the show.
Our pleasure. And you're in Austin, I understand, where it's 32 degrees in Austin.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's a little colder than that here, but tomorrow it will lift and spring will be here and we'll all be joyous. It is amazing to me when I look at that overall amount of student debt. You know, $28,400 average is nothing to sneeze at. That's a lot of money to have hanging over your head when you get out of college.
Yes, and it's important to note that not all students graduate from college with debt. And like you said, about 7 out of 10 in the recent graduates graduate with some amount of debt, but that means that about 3 out of 10 aren't graduating with any debt. And, you know, within that average, there's a lot of variation. So some people aren't graduating with as much debt as others, but it's definitely a burden. And I think it's important to note that, you know, recent data shows that Americans are carrying over $1 trillion in student debt. And that's second only to home mortgages in the United States. And so this is a really important problem that we really need to tackle and think about.
You know, it may not be all students, but still it's the vast majority of students, which is amazing. I found 7 out of 10 to be a significant number. So what did your study show? What are the physical, the psychological ill effects from that kind of debt?
So we approached this study with two kind of main questions. The first question was, what's the association between student loans, like the total amount of student loans that you take out while you're going to school over the course of your schooling, and then your mental health in early adulthood? And that tends to be the 20s and 30s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we also asked well, you know, while you're in school, when you're taking out this student loans, is there also an association with your mental, you know, well-being? And what we found was, regardless of the way we looked at it, the more amount of student loans that you borrowed, the poorer your mental health.
In both areas, while you were in school and
yes,
when you got out.
While you're in school and also once you're out, yeah. Which was a little bit surprising because we thought, well, when you're in school, it's possible that, you know, you're just thinking, you're not really thinking about repaying it.
Right.
But I think that maybe just the act of taking out and knowing that down the road you're going to have to repay that amount of debt could be stressful itself.
And down the road in the not too distant future, I mean,
exactly.
Many students were looking at a couple of years from now, what in the world am I going to do to pay this back?
Yes, yes. And then, of course, there are also the students that go on to graduate school. And if they go on to graduate school or medical school or law school, they're probably taking out some additional loans as well.
Right. So what were the mental and the physical effects?
Well, we actually, and the published study only looked at mental health. And so we used a kind of a validated scale of symptomology. So these were things like, you know, in the past month, how often did you feel downhearted and blue, nervous, kind of sad, those types of symptoms. And so this is really a measure of functioning, like how well you're functioning, a measure of well-being. And so it's not really a measure of clinical depression. So I guess that might relieve some of the listeners out there. We're not saying that you take out student loans and you're going to be depressed, like clinically depressed. It's just that it does seem to kind of reduce one's overall psychological functioning.
Mm-hmm. You also looked at what type of college the students attended, what degrees they earned, how wealthy their families were. Did it make a difference if it was a two-year school or a four-year school, if it was an expensive school or a not-so-expensive school? Not that they all aren't expensive, but less expensive?
Yes, I mean, so we were interested in looking at some of these subgroups because we thought that maybe there are certain groups who might experience a greater burden of student loans might affect their mental health differently. So you're right. One of the questions that we asked was, does it matter if you're attending a two-year school versus a four-year school? And what we found was it didn't. And, you know, we thought that initially it might because two-year students often don't take out as much student loans as people who go to a four-year college because four-year colleges, like you said, are more expensive than typical community colleges, but we didn't find that was the case. We also looked at whether people who didn't actually complete a bachelor's degree had a stronger relationship between student loans and mental health, and we also didn't find that to be the case. And so those were a couple of those questions that we thought we might find something, but we didn't. And then there was this kind of finding that you mentioned in your introduction, around parental net worth. And we're interested in kids who, or students, sorry, students, young adults, who grew up in families that had negative net worth. And we thought it would be interesting to look at to see whether taking out more student loans was worse for their mental health than students who came from backgrounds that their parents had, you know, at least some amount of net worth. And what we found was actually, one could think of as surprising, the students who came from families that had negative net worth actually reported better mental health if they were taking out more student loans. And you know, we thought that there could be a few explanations for that. And one of them could be that that student loans could be kind of a vehicle for upward mobility for these students. You know, if they didn't have student loans, they might not have been able to actually go to college. And so through this upward mobility of going to college, that could have improved their mental health. It's also possible that it could have just been a selection effect, that these kids that or students that come from families with negative net worth, that there's just something about them, that they might have some personality characteristics that are associated with mental health, right? Like being optimistic, being, you know, personally motivated, being driven.
Right.
And so that could maybe be an explanation. And it's also just possible that it was a finding that we found with our sample, but if someone else replicated it in a different sample, it just might not be there. So there's a lot of possibilities. It just points to the need to really do some more research in this area to get a better handle on what's going on.
And maybe the next study should be the mental health of the parents who are funding a good portion of the education. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I was thinking about, you know, what other things are important, and I think families and parents, and also once you're done with school, spouses, right? You know, if you marry someone who also has a lot of student loans, what does that mean for your relationship, and what does it mean for your financial health and even your mental health?
Right.
So, yes.
There have been other studies that show that higher levels of education may lead, I don't know what this, at what point in your life this would happen, but they may lead to better self-reported mental and physical health in the long run. How long is the long run?
Oh, I mean, yes, I'm one of my research areas is looking at education and health, and there's a substantial amount of literature of studies out there that find that people who graduate from college, they live longer, they live healthier lives, they engage in healthier behaviors, they're more likely to exercise, they're more likely to eat right, they're more likely to do a lot of these things that then lead to better health, to better mental health, to better physical health. And so in the end, they're living longer.
So the research that shows that college is still a good investment for your employment and also for your mental health holds up.
Yes, yes. I mean, I wouldn't want someone to take away from the study that you shouldn't go to college because of debt, because that's not the takeaway point.
Right.
The takeaway point is that there are, you know, student debt can spill over and can have effects in other life areas, including your health, and we really just need to be cognizant of that and really understand it so that we can provide information to families and to students and also to policymakers who are making these decisions about student loans and, you know, how people, you know, different policies around repayment, interest right. rates, these types of things.
I wonder if anybody did a study some 30 years ago when taking inflation into account, education was 250% less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there are any studies. Are there, were people happier then?
Yeah, no, I mean, I did pretty extensive research looking to see what other people have done, and I didn't really come across anything looking at student loans and any kind of aspect of health or mental health. There's some research out there related to, you know, marriage, related to completing the degree, and related to occupational choices, especially among medical students, but there wasn't much out there about health itself. And so going back to your question around what might have happened if we looked at it when college wasn't so expensive, I mean, I think your next guest is going to talk about the trends in financial aid and how the student loan debt has just increased over time as well. And people who went to school in the 1980s and even in the early 90s probably didn't have to make some of these choices that the students today have to make around mm-hmm. how much to take out.
We welcome phone calls now. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Interested in hearing from all of you who have recently gone to college or those of you who have gone to college in years past. We're looking at this study done by the University of South Carolina and our guest, Professor Katrina Walsman, Assistant Professor in the Department of Health Promotion, Education, and Behavior at the University of South Carolina, that looks at the mental health of students, and this includes most students now, 7 out of 10, who have to borrow money to pay for school, and the average debt that they owe is $28,400, which is no small sum of money. How does it affect their mental health? Well, you provide the stories here. How has all of this affected your mental health? Maybe you went to school years ago when you didn't have that kind of debt. Did you leave school being a happier person, less stressed because of having to pay back debt? We welcome your phone calls, and here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and we start our calls with Charlie in Monona. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, good afternoon. Very interesting topic. My wife and I have two children that are now 36, 31, and we put them both through college. Well, they paid part of the loan. We took out the Parent PLUS loan to do it. We bought our house in 1980 in Monona. that the kids grew up in and eventually went to college from. We're still in the house. Just last month, I got the mortgage. We got, my wife and I got the mortgage below what our mortgage was in 1980 after putting the student loans on it.
Mm.
So, you know, as to stress, you know, fortunately, the wheels didn't fall off somewhere along the line, and we both were able to have jobs that let us, you know, continue to make those payments. And fortunate that we had a home that we could, you know, plow those student loans onto the mortgage mm-hmm. and do it that way. So in a lot of ways, we're fortunate, but, you know, all along the line, at any minute, something could go wrong.
Right.
And so far, so good.
Good. And how are your daughters doing?
Daughter and son, they're both doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both got good jobs. We're fortunate that they took classes that got them into stuff, and they're both doing extremely well. So that's the good news, too.
Right. And they had a little bit of debt, did you say?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what the percentage was, but they took, you know, what they could take as students, and then we took the rest as Parent PLUS loans. And then eventually, you know, as the PLUS loan went down a little bit and mortgage rate changed, then we'd move them over onto the mortgage and refinance.
Mm-hmm. And have they been able, Charlie, have they been able to pay off their debt?
I think my son, who is the older one, who's 36, I think his is paid off. Our daughter is 31. I think she's still got a bit hanging over her, but she's been plugging along at it for, you know, 8, 9, 10 years.
Oh, my goodness. That's such a long period of time, isn't it, Katrina?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the standard repayment for a long time was 10 years, but they've recently changed it. So you can select up to a repayment plan up to 20 years. So it's possible you graduate when you're 25, you're still making payments when you're 40.
That is one heck of a long time. And that, of course, would have ramifications for buying a house yourself or maybe getting married or certainly having children.
Right. And then if you yourself have children who want to go to college and you want to help, like the caller did, pay for their college, then what does that mean? You're then going to take out more loans and continue to pay until you're retired.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some, I mean, I've read recent studies where people who are retired are paying student loans still.
Whew.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie, I'm glad things worked out, although it could have been easier for everybody involved. And thank you very much for your call. We go to Sean next in Milwaukee. Hi, Sean.
Hi, first-time caller. As a current college student, I think a lot of the stress with college loans comes from after you graduate, these loans become due within 6 months when most people don't find a career in their intended major for up to 2 or 3 years.
And mm-hmm.
we're at our absolute poorest when we're just starting out in a career, and that's when these loans become due. So that's all I really had to say. Interested to hear your take.
When do you graduate, Sean? Are you feeling the pressure?
Yeah, there's definitely pressure. That puts a lot more pressure to find a major in your field right away.
Mm-hmm. 6 months isn't very long, is it, Professor?
No, and there, you know, it's interesting. As part of this paper, I looked at some of the other policies around the world that other countries have, and many of them have different types of policies that kind of address what the caller is talking about there, where you don't start paying back the loans immediately, or you only start paying it back once you reach a certain income threshold. And so I think there are other solutions out there, and we can look to other countries to see what they're doing and see how effective they are in reducing kind of some of this burden around student loans. I think it's an important thing that we should probably start looking at.
Are we looking at it in any way or not?
Well, I mean, there's some research out there that's doing some comparisons between how much debt we have and the different policies, but I think it'd probably be a good Sandy Baum might actually have some more information as to whether people are looking at evaluating those policies or not. I'm not quite sure if that's the case yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At least not for health. I should say that. Yeah.
Right. Thank you, Sean, for your call. Mary in Madison. Hi.
Yes. Hi.
Hi, Mary.
I just am kind of struck by the irony of I work at a small community mental health agency, and we hire lots of newly graduated master degree clinicians with social work, marriage and family therapy or professional counseling degrees, and it's been really challenging to retain them because they really are struggling with the burden of student loan debt to stay in a profession that they trained for because salaries really just can't help support them. Mm-hmm. And it's really challenging to see that stress, and ironic that, you know, they've trained to work in a mental health field and are struggling with their own stress over making it.
Where do they go, Mary?
Well, I've had people leave for outside of the, I mean, different fields. You know, business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just been difficult to retain folks, and it's been distressing to just see the concern that they are clearly carrying around not being able to do the work that they want to do and that they trained for. And I think I'd be curious to see if you've got people who are recruiters for graduate schools in social work and marriage and family therapy who are looking at their student enrollment decline because, you know, people are just looking at the numbers upon graduation of what you can earn in those fields. Yeah. Teachers, I think, are experiencing the same thing. It's mm-hmm. really, really challenging for people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of an ultimate irony, isn't it, Professor Walzman, that you train to be in mental health and then you get into the field and because of your own mental health, you have to leave your field because of student debt.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that this point really goes back to the importance of asking these questions. And some of them might seem very intuitive because people are witnessing this in their own life, as the caller has witnessed in her field. But, you know, we don't really know on a grand scale what's going on. And so it's really important to understand how this is affecting people's career decisions and their life decisions and their health and their stress and all of these other things.
So. Right. Thank you, Mary, very much for your call. Jamie in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I think my first point has probably been covered, and that was the issue of graduating and not getting a job or getting a job at Target or some such place, which obviously, you know, is not commensurate with your education and the loan that you got. But my second point I'll go into has to do with parents who have helped their students navigate the loan process. And I have several friends who had, as parents, made payments all along while their students were in school. But there are so many snafus. A friend received a letter indicating nothing had been paid. The loans are sold. And so I don't think a 24-year-old or 22-year-old, I think it's mind-boggling to deal with a bureaucracy like this, like any bureaucracy. And these retired parents have the ability to be on the phone for an hour and a half with an agency to try to get to the right person to talk to get answers from. But there are mistakes that are made that make understanding the loan system really complex, and that certainly adds to the stress for the family as a whole.
I'm sure it does. Professor Walzman.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's, I'm starting, my wheels are turning here and thinking about all the things that we could, you know, ask, and your point about families and parents and their experiences themselves with dealing with student debt is really important. I think it's something that we definitely need to look at. And I think that, you know, some schools have financial aid offices that have programs to help students with planning and taking out loans and things like that. I don't know the numbers. Maybe the other person who will be interviewing later has some of those numbers. But I think that's also really an important thing to look at is what is, you know, if you have this 22-year-old and they actually get some financial counseling, you know, does that help alleviate some of the stress? Does that help them navigate the system? And that would be really interesting to know.
Yeah. One more call for you, Robin in Whitewater. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to kind of give a little bit of encourage to some people. I'm 24 years old. I had a child at 15, you know, waitressed for years and years, and it just was kind of stuck in a rut. I couldn't afford to go to school for anything. I didn't, you know, was just barely making it by, really. So I got a couple of grants and loans, and I went to school for massage therapy. I'm hoping to be in the kind of holistic nutrition kind of, you know, field, and finding a career or a semi-career to kind of lead up into what you're trying to, you know, really get into can really help. And, you know, so I'm only paying back about $10,000 in loans, and now I can, you know, do massage through college for another career rather than just waitress my way through and, you know, just barely make ends meet. So, you know, looking into, you know, a kind of a stepping stone kind of career can really help a lot of people out, kind of in my situation.
And what do you want to do ultimately? Do you want to stay in massage, Robin, or?
I would like to go into nutrition or just something in the natural health care field. But being in massage, you get your just base knowledge of anatomy and physiology,
yes.
And it really kind of helps you discover yourself and what, you know, direction you want to go. So.
And you're in school as well?
No, I just completed school.
Oh, I see. You completed school for massage. Gotcha.
Right.
Okay. Well, what do you say, Professor Walsman?
I think that's a compelling story, and I think it also speaks to maybe some of the findings that I had there around, you know, student loans as this vehicle for, you know, improving your life circumstances or upward mobility, you know, being able to do something you really want to do and you feel passionate about.
Right.
Getting more education. We know education itself is related to more stable employment, more income, better health. And so, yeah, I think that's why I wouldn't want people to think the takeaway point is student loans are always universally bad. I think that it can be definitely helpful for students who can't in any other way afford to go to college.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. It's obvious that there much more attention needs to be paid to this issue. Professor Walsman, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Professor Katrina Walsman is assistant professor in the Department of Health Promotion, Education, and Behavior at the University of South Carolina. We'll move to the issue of the cost of college. Our guest, the next part of the show, Professor Sandy Baum, has written extensively on issues relating to college access, college pricing, student aid policy, student debt, affordability. She's co-authored the College Board's annual publications, Trends in College Pricing, and she's done that since 2002. She teaches education finance and policy courses for the Higher Education Administration Program at George Washington University and chaired the College Board's Rethinking Student Aid Study Group, which issued comprehensive proposals for reform of the federal student aid system in 2008. We'll see what happened with that. So we'll continue our phone calls. Our number one line is open right now, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, joining us now is Professor Sandy Baum. Professor Sandy Baum, thank you so much for being with us.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
So we're looking at what's happened in the past 30 years or so. The amount of debt, I'm sorry, this debt just seems extraordinarily high to me. And the number of young people who are carrying almost $30,000 in debt, that's too much money, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the aggregate amount of debt is really hard to interpret because, of course, what really matters is how much debt individual students have, right? As more and more people go to college, of course, the total amount of debt increases. So I'm very worried about some students who borrow more than they will be able to repay. But actually, $30,000, I mean, if you have a bachelor's degree, $30,000 is not that much. If you look at the typical earnings of a bachelor's degree recipient compared to somebody who doesn't have a college degree, in just a few years, you're going to pay that off easily. Actually, the people with the most trouble paying off their debt are people who borrowed relatively small amounts of money, but either didn't complete a degree or went and completed some sort of a credential that actually doesn't do them any good. So the people who default on their student loans, they're not people who have $30,000 of debt. They're people who have $5,000 or $10,000 of debt, and they're really struggling because they may make the minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in this commission that you were on back in 2008 that looked at reforming the federal student aid system. Mm-hmm. What were your recommendations in 2008, and have those been met?
Some of them actually have been met. One of the most important things is that the student aid system needs to be simplified. We have a very complicated system of college pricing. People have no idea how much it's going to cost them to go to college because you see headlines about the sticker price. That's not what people pay because most people get student aid. But you don't know in advance how much that will be. And so one of the things we would like is for the application process to be simpler, for there to be more early information about what you're going to get. And, of course, it would be great if there's more money. But another big thing was that when people pay back student loans, they should be able to pay affordable amounts. If they're unemployed, if they have low incomes, they shouldn't have to pay more than their income will support. Mm-hmm. And we now do have income-based repayment for federal student loans. So if you have federal student loans and you're unemployed or you have a low income, you don't have to pay more than you can afford. That's big progress.
And do most people have federal student loans or do they have something else?
Most people have federal student loans. There was a period, it's almost a decade now ago, before the market crashed, when a lot of people were taking private student loans, which are much riskier. Now there are still people who go to the bank and borrow a private student loan, and you're not well protected if you do that. If you stick to federal student loans, you're going to be much safer than if you go to the bank and borrow money.
Mm-hmm. So where does your income have to be? We heard from a young student within the last half hour who's graduating soon from college who knows that he's going to have to start paying back on a loan 6 months from now. Are the chances that he'll be able to defer that until he gets a decent income pretty good? And what would that income be?
If your income is less than 150% of the poverty line, and that depends on your family size, if you're a single person, the poverty line is 150% of the poverty line would be about $18,000. If your income is below that, you won't have to make payments. And then as your income rises above 150% of the poverty line, you have to pay, and there are a couple of different programs, but basically 10% of the amount that your income exceeds that. So you get to keep 150% of the poverty level, and then you pay 10% of the amount, the extra amount of your income. So people need to know about this program, and they need to get into it. And I know some people face bureaucratic problems getting into it, but if you have a low income, that's the thing to do. Get into the income-based repayment plan.
Well, how do you get into it?
If you go online, you can look for it. If you ask your lender, you can look for it. If you ask the financial aid office at your college, but just go online and look up federal loan payments, income-based repayment.
And the average amount of $28,000, $29,000, do you have any idea how long it's taking for recent college graduates to pay off that debt? What's a reasonable figure and what's actual?
Well, the standard loan repayment period is 10 years. Now, if you end up not making payments for a while because you don't have any income, it's going to take you longer. It is possible for some people to stretch out the payments and pay over a longer period of time. Most people, there are terrible stories of people who really struggle to repay their loans, and we need to do something about that. Most people do pay off their loans over this 10-year period. Most people, when you graduate from college, say you have a bachelor's degree, some people get a job at Starbucks or they're unemployed for a while, and certainly during the recession, unemployment has been terrible for everybody. But it doesn't last for a long time for most people with college degrees. What you need to look at is, how are the people with college degrees faring relative to the people who didn't go to college? Everybody would be better off if we did not have a recession. Everybody would be better off if we had lower unemployment. And everybody would be better off if somebody else paid for their college education. But not going to college is still the worst option for most people.
Let's go to phone calls. We're jammed with them. And we go to Hannah in Woodruff first for you. Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
All right. How are you?
Doing good.
Good.
I just wanted to comment. I graduated in May. I have a degree in chemistry, and I took a job in Woodruff. Kind of a little bit difficult because there isn't a lot of competition for wages. So I don't earn a lot. And when it came by to start paying for my student loans, which I have a lot of student loans, I can't afford them. I am on income-based payment plans for my federal ones, and ones that are not federal, I had to defer. So that is not good because it collects interest. And on top of this, I've actually decided to go back to school to get another degree in order to try and get a better job.
Mm. Same field?
What's that?
Well, I mean, are you in the same field, or are you going somewhere to a different field?
I'm going to go into chemical engineering. So
I see.
It won't take me quite as long, but it's still going to take me about 2 years. And most engineering courses, you have to go to a larger college, so I'll be going to Duluth. And
right.
It's not cheap. It's costly.
Sure. Professor?
Well, I mean, one question is, I mean, the issue, as I said before, of federal loans versus non-federal loans, you should think really hard before you take loans that are not federal loans. Because, as you described, the income-based repayment plan covering your federal loans, you know, relieves you of that burden. But the federal government can't really do much about those loans that you owe, you know, to a bank or a Sallie Mae or whatever. So it's just really good. I mean, I know once you have those loans, it doesn't help for somebody to say you should have, you know, maybe you shouldn't have taken them. But those loans are much riskier. And the decision to go back to school, I mean, it really depends. Like, maybe that is really the right solution because you'll earn it back, and it will, you'll end up much better off. You have to look really carefully at what your options are. And borrowing money, I mean, people borrow money to start small businesses all the time, right? And many small businesses fail, but we still think it's a good idea for people to try if they think very carefully in advance about what the prospects are. So you want to be really sure that what you're doing, you know, there will be jobs in the field for which you're training when you get out.
Thanks, Hannah, for the call. Neil in Escanaba. Hi.
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 Am I on?
You are.
All right. I just wanted to say I have a comment. I was able to get through school because of my mother, who is she's very good, like, I guess, financial person. She's she worked her way up from a LPN to an RN. She's a single mom. We have this thing called the Michigan Educational Trust, and you buy into when you have a child that's small, and you keep paying into it, and when it's fully funded, it'll pay for 2 years of tuition at any community college in Michigan. And also, when I graduated in 2003, the standardized testing that we had to do, if you got above such a score, the state would chip in some money, but they don't do that anymore. And then there's also like schools like the school that I went to, North Central Area School, that have like promises that will contribute money towards your college tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
All right. Thank you. I'm glad everything worked out for you. What about programs like that? I remember the programs that Michigan was offering education. We had a certain grade point average. Are there those kinds of incentives still around, Professor Baum?
There are a number of different kinds of programs. Some of them are local, and some of them are state, and some of them are federal. One of the things that caller said is that his mother thought ahead and saved for college. And that's a really big issue because this is an investment that will be a lot easier to make if people save. Very few people are doing that now. And, you know, it's hard to do because, especially when the economy is bad. But college is not something that you can just pay for quickly in a couple of years. It's a big investment. It would be like buying a house and paying for it in cash.
Right.
So if it's at all possible for people to save even a little bit, that really makes a big difference.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Sherry in Whitewater. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Kathleen. I have two children in school right now. I have one that graduated or left with almost with a degree. I think with all due respect to your guest, one of the things that she is not talking about is that both Parents PLUS loans, which my husband and I will be paying probably till we're dead,
for our kids and the other student loans, the laws changed in the mid-90s, and that they changed so that the interest rate is now between 7.9 and 8.2%, and it's compounding interest. So the day you sign the papers, that interest starts compounding, and you don't have to make payments until you're out of school for 6 months, but if you don't, it adds up like a mortgage, you know, and as most people know, with a mortgage, you end up paying about three times the purchase price of your home by the time you're done. And that has an awful lot to do with why student debt is different now. And it's going to keep our young people from buying that first home, from starting a business, because they're already in debt so much. And because my kids are this age, I know a lot of recent graduates in the last 5 years. I don't know anybody that is working in the field they studied for. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Professor Baum.
Well, first of all, of course, there are lots of different colleges and lots of different things you can study. And, of course, many people are working in the fields they studied for. And many people do get general degrees where they don't know what they're going to want to do, and they are just going to figure that out with the skills that they've gotten. The parent loans, I think, are a really important issue that the caller raises, because parents need to be very careful. There's been a lot of controversy because, I mean, we can't win. I mean, some people would argue that we loan parents too much money, because parents can borrow sort of the whole cost of college, and parents get into trouble with borrowing too much. The federal government has recently tried to restrict that a little bit, to be a little tougher on how good your credit rating has to be to get those loans, and people have been outraged that people need to borrow this money. So we have a real problem with helping people, I think, to understand what is it reasonable to borrow, and really giving parents better advice so that they don't sign their futures away and end up paying forever for their students, you know, for their children's college education. If the parents are not in a position to repay the loans, they really should not take those loans. And there are probably cheaper options where their kids could go to school, maybe not their first choice, where the parents wouldn't have to borrow so much money. It is a real problem. I mean, it's like the housing crisis, where people get in over their heads because they don't have enough information to make good decisions in advance. And we need to help people make really better decisions.
Well, it sounds like we also need to help people figure out ways to go to college and not have college be this huge, huge expense. I mean, people shouldn't have to be paying these enormous interest rates or having to worry about delaying a house or get worried about having to pay their loans back. There's something wrong with the system, isn't there, from what we're hearing?
Well, there's nothing wrong with people borrowing money to some extent to pay for college, because the reality is that college, for most people, is a very good investment. You make much more money if you go to college than if you don't, and you can pay it back out of the earnings premium. That's not to say that works for everyone, but it works for the vast majority of college students. It would be much better if the states would fund higher education more generously, and if public tuition were lower. The reason the tuition has gone up so much at the state universities is because the state doesn't provide anywhere near the same level of funding that they used to fund. And either we have to pay taxes so that we can fund those universities and people can go for lower tuition, or people are going to have to pay tuition and pay it back out of their earnings premium. I mean, we could certainly be more efficient, but it's expensive to educate people, and we're going to have to figure out the best way as a society to pay for it so that it's not resting on every individual.
More phone calls momentarily. If you're trying to reach us, 800-486-8655 is our number. And our guest this part of the show is Professor Sandy Baum, who's written extensively on issues relating to college access, pricing, student aid policy, student debt, affordability. She's co-authored the College Board's annual publications, Trends in College Pricing, since 2002. And she teaches higher education finance and policy for the Higher Education Administration Program at George Washington University. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's an email that has come in. Jen writes, I graduated from UW-Madison in 2001 with $54,000 in student loan debt. I lived like a pauper for 8 years. I paid it off before my son was born in 2009. I had to take out private loans with a variable interest rate. I was a first-generation college student, felt I had to go to school if I wanted to do well in life. It can be done. I did it. I never went on spring break. I never had a credit card. I never even had cable in college.
So that's a very impressive story, and that's exactly right. I mean, $54,000 is a lot of money to have to borrow, and I wish that no one had to borrow that much money, and there should be more grant aid for a student like that. But the idea that what he did was he said, I'm going to live, you know, maybe the way I would be living if I hadn't gone to college. I'm going to do that and pay it off. Some people do that. Not that many people do it because they think I went to college. I should live at a higher standard of living. Those are the kinds of trade-offs that people have to make, and that's a story that everyone should hear.
But now Jen's son has been born, and the whole process begins again if Jen is saving the kind of money that he or she should be saving for the son, right?
Right, but he has a college education, and it will be easier for him than it was for his parents. He was a first-generation student to be able to get a good job that makes enough money to be able to help his son go to college.
Jim in Turtle Lake, hi.
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 I was wondering if there's ever been any push for any legislation to, I'm 60 years old, a little ways from retirement. I have three boys, two went to UW-Madison, one is in Duluth. The two older are done with their undergrad. But anyway, long story short, I was wondering, I would like to know if there's ever been anybody suggest legislation that where a person could, I'm old enough to take my 401k money, some of it, and if I, to pay those loans off, but that I would be up in the 30-some percent tax bracket if I did that, because I would get taxed on that. I wondered if anybody's ever suggested some relief if it was used for that.
Well, you can use, you know, IRA funds. There are exceptions for IRA funds that you can use them to pay for education. I mean, the problem is we don't want you to be in a mess when it's time to retire. So that may be a good solution, but it's not at all clear because we have a serious problem. I mean, paying for college is not the only problem we have in this country. Paying for retirement is a really big problem. And so I mean, I think we need to find the solution somewhere that's not asking people to use their retirement funds.
Right. Thank you so much for your call. Getting short on time, everybody. Let's go to Terry, probably our last caller. Hi, Terry in La Crosse.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
All right. How are you?
I'm good. I'll be quick.
Okay.
My wife and I, we came out of school in 97, 98. I was a teacher. She was a physical therapist. We had $125,000 of student loan debt.
Ooh.
I actually worked two full-time jobs at the same time. My wife did medical transcription on weekends, trying to catch up. Tried a lot of things, and honestly, we didn't make much progress. But what happened was we canceled our cable, canceled our newspaper, and really put a focus on paying off that debt as quickly as we could, and we paid it off in under 4 years. So, you know, it was really a blessing for us, and we have four kids today, a 12-year-old, twins that are eight, and a five-year-old, and I think for all of them except for the youngest one, we have at least $20,000 put away for college in a college fund. So it was a good thing for us. Not pleasant at the time, though.
No, I'm sure it wasn't. And you've got a backstory there I'd like to hear, but unfortunately we don't have time for it. So we'll be on this topic again. Thank you very much, Professor Baum, for being with us. Appreciate your insight.
Thank you.
Professor Sandy Baum, she is a co-author of the College Board's publication Trends in College Pricing, and she is an education, finance, and policy course professor at the Higher Education Administration Program at George Washington University. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour, and thanks to Scotty as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up. Stay with us for The Life of Vel Phillips, which is our next hour after the news.